Hey everybody, welcome back to StadiaCast. I'm Bill, that's Lloyd. Lloyd, how you doing, man?
I feel about 18 pounds lighter because I finally got a haircut after what felt like 6 months, so I'm doing really good. It's amazing how much better you feel when you just you get rid of all the hair on your head. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I wonder what that's like. So if you did not know, this is a podcast all about Google Stadia, and each and every week on Sunday morning at 10 a.m., Lloyd and I sit down and we talk about all of the games that we've been playing on Google Stadia, as well as the Stadia-related news, and I gotta say, there's a lot for us to get to. So before we get started, I just want to let everybody know, right down below the like or next to the like button, there is a subscribe button. If you click on that button, you can then get notified each and every time that we go live. I've been getting some people asking about, I'm not getting the notifications. What's up with that? Try turning it off and on again. I don't know what the issue is. I even had some, like one of our viewers say, hey, I wrote it like a script that emails me when you post a new video. I was like, all right, well, that's pretty crazy, but awesome. Check out all those buttons down below, like the join button, the super chat button, all the applause button. They all do cool things that help out the show. Let's get started. Lloyd, what have you been playing this week, man?
It's been an interesting week. I work at a university. I think I've told this story here. I've told it on my other podcasts. And the ramp up to September is usually really busy. Last September wasn't busy because the university wasn't open. It was all remote classes. They've decided to change a lot of that. So what is normally a busy time got really busy all of a sudden. So as much as I wanted to play through the entirety of Bloodstained, I've only gotten maybe 20% of the way through playing Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. What a fantastic game. I played it at launch, and they fixed a lot of the rough edges that are happening in it. If you're not familiar with what Bloodstained is, it's Castlevania by the creator, one of the main creators of one of the best Castlevania games, Castlevania Symphony of the Night. He left and can no longer call it Castlevania, so he called it Bloodstained. That's Koji Igarashi. And he kickstarted Bloodstained, came out with a 2D version and then the 3D version. And it's been out for quite some time. It's a Metroidvania, so you have to get skills before you can explore more of the map. There's like platforms that are too high, so you need like a double jump or something. Bloodstained is that game with the ability to kill enemies. And every once in a while, you have a very slight chance to absorb their demonic essence in a crystal, which then you can use as special weapons and special powers and things like that. So I've been making my way through Bloodstained, and it is such a fantastic game. And the best part about it is I can now start it within about 30 seconds of thinking, I should play some Bloodstained, because I can start it on my phone, play it with my Backbone controller, which is fantastic, or I can boot it up on my laptop or turn on one of my old Chromecast Ultras or my Google TV or Chromecast with Google TV device. And I've been playing a lot of Bloodstained. It's such a great game.
I played a tiny bit of that. I kind of got more sucked into playing Ys IX, Monstrum Nox, and I definitely want to talk about that game. But I did play a little bit of Bloodstained, and I have to say it's really good. The animations are great. It's a beautiful game, and it controls really well as well. It does. But I want to talk about Ys IX. I'm going to say like 5 or 6 hours into the game at this point. Maybe more than that. I'm not sure. But okay. So let me talk about the combat really quick, because everything about the game is just kind of, it's okay. But the combat is awesome. The combat is really, really good. So it's an action combat JRPG. It comes with all of the JRPG tropes, which I usually find quite grating anyway. So even though I like JRPGs, the tropes that come with them irritate me. So maybe that's why I'm like, it's meh. But the combat is just really great. So the way it works is basically you've got like one attack button. It's your B button. You spam the B button like crazy anytime you get a chance. And that fills up like this little blue bar. And then you can use that blue bar in order to use some skills. So you hold down the right trigger or not the right trigger, the right bumper, and then you can hit your face buttons to use different skills, and that fills up this red bar. And then as the red bar gets to the top, then you're able to hit both of your bumpers, or maybe it's clicking both of your sticks. You do two buttons at the same time, essentially. And your character gets like super powered, and all of your attacks do a lot more damage. It's really, really cool. But then layered on top of that, and like I did my first impressions video, and if you haven't seen that, make sure that you check it out. But I'm going to have to do like an update to that, I think, because after that, then you unlock being able to control multiple characters. So anytime during combat, you can just hit a button and swap to a different character, and different characters are focused on certain damage types. And so you might have somebody who's really good at slashing, somebody who's really good at like a punching thing, and somebody who's really good at, you know, some other thing. And then you have enemies that you're fighting, and they'll have like a little icon that matches the damage type that you should use on these enemies. And as you use that damage type on those enemies, that icon will slowly get smaller and smaller until you break it, and then they are stunned, and so you can get in there and really lay down a damage at that point. Yep. The combat is amazing. Have you had a chance to put any time into Ys 9 yet?
Yeah, I put, I think, just shy of 2 hours as I was playing through the game. So I got through the initial escape and stuff like that. That happens right at the start of the game. It's really impressive. I started playing with keyboard and mouse. I do not like the keyboard and mouse controls. They are really bad because it doesn't matter where you think you're facing with the keyboard and mouse. If you hit forward, you're always going to walk the way your character is facing, even though you're trying to hold like A to kind of like strafe around. And man, I was getting frustrated with that. So I switched over to controller. It is fantastic. It's a really fun game. I know what you mean by everything is kind of unexciting, and that's kind of a Falcom. If you play any Falcom RPG, they're kind of the same way with very, very specific room designs, without a lot of exploration inside the rooms, a lot of pathways that you can't go down and stuff like that. The voice acting, I love it. I'm all about cheesy JRPG voice acting, and this game does not disappoint. And it's funny, if you play enough JRPGs, you start to recognize kind of like the bit voice actors that do a lot of like kind of the filler roles and stuff like that. So that's been a lot of fun. But yeah, I really like I like the battle system. It's an active battle system, so real time. You're moving around. You can dodge and strafe behind the enemies and attack them. It's been really fun. I'm kind of getting these games kind of conflated with Zelda Skyward Sword, because I've been playing that as well. And I'm like, you just waggle your hand. I'm like, wait, no, that's Skyward Sword. You don't do that. But yeah, I've been really enjoying Ys 9. I like the Ys series. I've played the first one. I think I played the second one, and then I played the eighth one, or maybe the seventh one before that. So there's a large gap in my knowledge between the early games and the later games. But just like Final Fantasy, each story is kind of a self-contained thing. So you don't have to worry that you didn't play 8 or 7 or 6 or 5 before you jump into this one. If you like JRPGs, if you like the thought of exploring, and as Bill said, unlocking larger parties and things like that, this game is really, really good. I need to spend some more time with it, of course. A couple hours in is really nothing when you're playing a JRPG. Sometimes the initial monologue that your characters go on sometimes takes 2 hours in JRPGs. Thankfully, this game isn't one of those, but there's enough mystery, and you meet a mysterious person that gives you some powers and then disappears, and you're like, what am I doing? How do I do this? What is she trying to tell me? All those things come up in my mind, which makes me want to drive forward and explore more of the narrative in this game.
You know, you bring up the narrative, and I will say that I find the story to be really interesting. It's very, very weird. And I don't want to get into any kind of details on the story, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But what I've experienced so far, I'm like, what in the hell is going on here? This is a really strange story. Very interesting the way that they're going about it. I also want to take just a second and talk about the map. So, like, when you're in a dungeon, you can bring up the map and you can see all of the treasure chests that are on the map. And so, like, you know, all right, there's a treasure chest somewhere around here. And now I just have to figure out how to use my, in the game calls them gifts, like my character, or like the main character has the ability to dash to a thing, kind of like Noct does in Final Fantasy 15. And then you get another character very early on that can run up walls. And so you can kind of combine these things, these different gifts, in order to find your way to a treasure chest that is really well hidden, which is really cool. And then on the map, it shows you, it's like, by the way, you found all of the treasure chests in this space, or you've got one more to find, so you can go back and find it. There's a lot of replayability there.
Love it.
There's also a lot of replayability in eventually you unlock this thing, where a lantern, and you can use the lantern to go into your old missions and replay them in order to try and get a higher score, or to get crafting materials, or to just get more experience. So overall, I think that this is a great game. And if you haven't picked it up and you enjoy JRPGs, you absolutely should pick up Ease 9. And then, speaking of Ease 8, I don't know if it's still on Stadia Pro, but up until last week it was. Ease 8 is another really good game that never really grabbed me, but that was really more of the fault of when the game came out and I was distracted by other things at the time. So if you're not sure about the Ease series and you've got Stadia Pro, try out 8, and if you like it, then pick up 9. I like 9 a lot more than 8.
Yeah, I really like the gifts. Like, when you unlock your tether thing, I'm like, okay, that is really cool. And then you unlock some other powers. I love the way that they're kind of going at giving you additional functionality and more things that you can use for attacking, instead of just lumping it all on you and saying, hey, have fun, figure it out. It seems like a really good measured way to do it. Fantastic title. I can't wait to make my way through it and kind of figure out what the heck is happening in this world.
All right, let's move on and talk about... Well, actually, before we move on, I did ask people, because we did have a couple of games that came out. So first off, Lloyd and I did a bonus episode this week because FIFA went up for pre-orders. So if you missed that bonus episode where we talked all about that, make sure that you check it out. It was a good episode, and it's in the feed, so check that out or look for it on the YouTube channel. Streets of Rage 4 also got released this week on Google Stadia. Now, I haven't picked it up yet, and Lloyd hasn't picked it up yet, mostly because we just started playing these other games, so I don't know that I want to jump in on yet another one immediately, but it's definitely something that's on my radar. I've already played through Streets of Rage 4 and beat it, and I own it on two platforms, but it's just such a good game. I want to play it everywhere, and a majority of my friends list is on Stadia, so I will end up having to pick it up at some point. It's just so good. But real quick, I did a poll in chat while we were talking, and I asked, did anybody pick up Streets of Rage or pre-order FIFA? 74% said neither, 12% picked up Streets of Rage, 11% picked up FIFA, and 2% picked up both. If you want to be part of these polls, come here for the live show, and you can vote in those as well. We've got a lot of news to talk about, Lloyd, a ridiculous amount. Google, like last week on the show, I basically said, don't go into this Stadia keynote thing expecting to get a lot of announcements that the consumer is going to care about. And I still stand by that, but as people who are very interested in what's going on with Stadia, there was a lot of very interesting things, but I don't think we'll see the repercussions of these things for an extremely long time, but it's also really good changes. So why don't you tell people about the rev split part, that first part?
Sure. Yeah. Like during the keynote, they spent a long time kind of talking about where things had been, what has happened with Google Stream to Google Stadia to launch to whatever. And one of the first big announcements is they're changing the revenue split for developers and publishers that are putting their games on Stadia. So instead of the industry standard 70-30, which had been in place up until then, they're changing it to 85-15 for a period of time. I'm trying to find that slide, but it's really hard to find.
Yeah, I think it's until 2023.
Yeah, I think it's the end of 2023, but I can't remember if it's a specific month. But anyway, that doesn't really matter. What it means is that new games brought to the platform, instead of only earning 70% of the revenue, say if it's a $100 game, they would get $70. But now with the new rev split for $100 game, they're getting $85, which is a large increase in money that is coming into them. That is similar to what Epic Game Store does. That's what Apple does now. That's what Google does on the Android side. And this is good. There's a couple caveats. It's only for new titles. Mm-hmm. So if you've already producing a game, that is still going to maintain the 70-30 split, and it's only up to the first I think $3 million in sales. So if your game sells more than $3 million, it's going to revert back to the 70-30, and that is the same thing that Apple and Google does on their mobile app stores as well. So this is good. This is just one of the carrots that they threw out at the start of this during the keynote, to kind of, I don't know, invite more developers, more publishers, and get them jazzed about releasing titles on Stadia.
Yeah, the other carrot that they brought, or one of the other carrots that they brought, is the way that they're using Stadia Pro. Up until now, the way that it has worked is you give $10 to, you subscribe to Stadia Pro for $10 a month, Google keeps $10. Now the way it's going to work is Google is only going to keep $3, and then they're going to take that $7, or the 70% of all of the Stadia Pro proceeds that are coming in, they're going to take 70% of that and split it up amongst all of the games that are on Stadia Pro. So if you've got a game like Streets of Rage 4 on Stadia Pro, which it's not, but if it were, I'm just using this as an example. If you've got a game like Streets of Rage 4 on Stadia Pro, then you're going to get some of that money for being on Pro. And the amount that you get depends on how many times people are playing your game. Not how much time that you spend playing the game, but how many times you log in and play that game. So if you log in and play today, and then you log in and play tomorrow, that counts as basically two times. If I log in today four times, that counts as one play. If I log in and play for 7 hours and I play a game, that counts as one play. And if I log in and I play for 10 minutes, that counts as one play. So the games that people are firing up the most often are going to get a bigger piece of that 70%, which I think is a pretty fair way to do it. Otherwise, it would very heavily favor games where, you know,
100-hour epics.
Yeah, 100-hour epics. Although, at the same time, I tend to play those quick pick-em-up-and-put-em-down games far more. Like, my play time on those is always way higher than those 100-hour epics, because I usually get distracted by the 100-hour epics and never get back to it. But that might just be a build problem.
Yeah, it is really interesting. It's a good way to kind of level the playing field a little bit, because if you are an indie game studio and you've been working on a game for years, but you understand that you have a game that's going to take 5 to 6 hours for most people to complete, that means that when you're in Pro, that could be one session. And if you add your game to Pro, you might make less money than, say, someone new. Say if I'm a new game developer, I'm looking at this info and it's like, well, I got to make a daily Sudoku game. I got to make a daily crossword puzzle game. I got to make a daily whatever. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of comes from this, just because of the rev share. But that is huge. Like, this is Google saying, we're taking less money. We're taking less money up front. We're taking less money through subscription, because we want this platform to grow and expand. And that is, to me, that is the exact thing that Google should be doing right now. So I was super happy to see it.
Yeah, you know, I want to get to Zach Owen's comment in just a second in chat. So I'm going to, like, lock my stuff so it won't scroll away, because I want to respond to that. But before I do, I also want to say that what you were just saying about, or you know what, I'm going to talk about Zach's comment first, because I forgot the point that I was going to make. Zach in chat, and if you want to be here for the live shows, you can participate in the show like Zach is. He says, this new method will squeeze out smaller indie games that are over in a short amount of time and will incentivize games as a service games. And while I understand why people would say that, you also have to remember that this is just for Stadia Pro. That's You're right. still going, like, this is on top of the sale price. So if you sell a game on Stadia, you're getting that 85%. The 70% thing has nothing to do with you unless you are part of Pro. And you don't have to be part of Pro. So while what we will probably end up seeing, it is possible that that will squeeze indie stuff out of Pro. But I mean, if I'm honest, I would probably rather be part of Pro anyway, because a lot of indie games, yes, they're in it to make money, but they're also like, they just want people to play their games. Yeah. And there's been a million things in the gaming industry where people have said, oh, look at this. This is going to end indie games. We're never going to see games from small publishers again because of X. And it never right. comes true, because there's always going to be people who are passionate and want to make the game that they want to make, whether or not they are working for some big company or not. So I don't think it's going to push those people out. But this method definitely favors those games as a service kind of game, which I have to be honest, that's probably not a popular opinion. I kind of like those games as a service kind of games. I tend to go back to them more often. And right. maybe it's because they've got their hooks into me. I don't know. Lloyd, yeah. you want to respond?
Yeah, like it could change the types of Pro titles that we get. So instead of getting smaller two-hour indie titles, maybe some of the kind of the mid-range titles will be ones where Google approaches them saying, hey, would you like to join Pro for 2 months from now? We're looking for a series of games. If you're an indie developer making a small game, you'd probably be like, you know what? I'm probably not going to make any more money doing it this way than just selling the copies on Pro or on Stadia. So no, I don't want to join it. Meanwhile, a game that, say, takes 10, 12 hours to complete, maybe it has daily challenges. Maybe it's a multiplayer thing with crowd play. So that's inviting more people to stream and play it more often. That would be a game that is more fit for Pro. So the Pro service might change just based on the types of games that we get, but it's not going to affect indie developers, because they're still getting either an upfront pay for bringing your game over. Google's still doing stuff like that, but it's also going to allow them to still sell their games. And then there's the next thing that we'll get into, which is another great way for these more indie developers to leverage their passionate community to then generate a little bit more revenue.
Yeah, and I know you just set up a perfect segue, but I'm not going to use it, unfortunately, because I feel like there's one other thing that people aren't considering when it comes to what I've forgotten his name, Zach said, to what Zach said, and it's that games don't have to be an either or. You can have a game that is just sold, and then after 3-4 months, when your sales have decreased and nobody's buying your game anymore, which is definitely what happens with indie games, like they hit, they're on fire, and then people move on to the next thing. Then they're like, all right, well, we need another shot of revenue. Let's put it on Stadia Pro. I mean, how many times has somebody said, I just bought this and now it's on Stadia Pro? There's a guaranteed thread on the subreddit when a new game comes out, gets mentioned, where the threat is, I'm not buying this because I think it's going to come to Pro, every single time. And there's a guaranteed threat on the subreddit every single time where somebody says, I just bought this and now it's Pro. So, you know, those publishers, those indie publishers, they're going to be able to do that, where they're selling their game, and then when people stop buying their game, they're going to turn around and end up putting it on Pro. And I think that that's perfectly fine with me. But then again, I've always been okay with a game going on Pro that I've already bought. So
exactly.
Maybe I'm a weirdo. All right. That segue that you tried to set up, and I just don't know. I walked away from the from the plate. The Stadia porting. the Stadia porting toolkit. This is
more the click to play is what I was getting into.
Yes. Sorry. I didn't have my my show notes up. I was looking at chat. All right. You know what? You do the segue then.
All right. So, boy, this would be perfect for something that Google has. All right. Perfect segue, Lloyd. Thanks you. Thank you for bringing that one up. So Google's announced during their keynote as well, another revenue generator for any publisher or any developer if you're self-publishing on Stadia. If you share a click-to-play link, you get a bounty for every single person that ends up signing up to Pro after clicking your link. So I think it's like a $10 bounty or whatever, a minimum $500 payout. So just by advertising your game on Twitter and Facebook, your Discord, your website, with links to Google to play now, and they'll click through and it's like, okay, I'll buy your game, play your game, sign up for an account, I'm going to sign up for Pro. If you pay that first month's Pro, that developer is going to get a bounty for it. $10 doesn't seem like much. I guess it seemed like much, a lot for content creators, but for you'd think a publisher wouldn't care too much about $10. But if they get 100,000 people to sign up over a given year, I mean, that's an extra $1 million that they just generated just by putting a specific link to all their games on their website. This could be huge, or it could just be another blip. But either way, but with the revenue split changing to 80-85-15, the subscription, you get a chunk of the subscription money, and then the click-to-play promotion, they've just given publishers three new ways to make money just by bringing their games to Stadia. So I'll be curious to see if we get like a big flood of games in 6 months because of these announcements.
I wouldn't say 6 months. I'm going to say probably longer than that, but we'll see. Maybe you're right with the Stadia porting toolkit, which we will get to in just a second. Usually we do the super chats at the end, but this one works in perfectly with our current conversation. And Matthew Ashcroft just sent in a super chat for $5. Thank you very much, Matt. Matthew, for the support. He says, I think the affiliate link to take a more direct role in advertising was also a pretty big thing. So that's exactly what Lloyd was just talking about. And yeah, if companies have their games on Stadia and they can make money by referring people to that Stadia link, first off, it's completely frictionless. You click a link and you're playing the game. That's huge. Getting people to sign up for Stadia Pro with through Twitter, through all of the social media stuff, that can be an absolute huge thing. Even if it's just sending out, I don't know about you, Lloyd, but I get a billion emails from gaming companies all day long.
Yep.
And they're always like, hey, here's this new thing that's coming out. Hey, I know that you like Final Fantasy. What about this? And they're like, blah, blah, blah. You know, like they're always sending me stuff. And a lot of times I do sit down and read them, like, because they're usually really, really short. And if they said, by the way, you can play my game right now by clicking this link, that's pretty damn cool. And that click to play link is very, very, that's something you can only do on Stadia, which I think is fantastic.
It's fantastic. And one thing that I didn't talk about, which I wanted to mention, is the best part of this for Google. I think Google will give $10 all day to people that want to advertise for them, because the more that gamers see Stadia links on Twitter, on Facebook, on Discord, on websites, the less like, oh, the three people that play Stadia comments that you get on Twitter, they're going to start going away, because Stadia is going to be part of the general conversation in gaming. If this turns out to be a moneymaker for publishers, if enough people are making money, they're going to be advertising this everywhere. And all of a sudden Stadia is going to stop being such the butt of jokes. And maybe it's going to be something that's going to be put up there a little bit higher in kind of like gamers brain space for how they rank things. Just having more advertising, more links out there, and more publishers actually talking about Stadia. Like we saw after this keynote, we saw a bunch of publishers were talking about, hey, check out our game on Stadia. Hey, did you know we're on Stadia? And I'm just like, whoa, a publisher that would never even put Stadia in the end cards or mention it on Twitter for platforms that the game is coming on, all of a sudden is already starting to talk about Stadia. So I think this is a really good Trojan horse into kind of like the gamer's headspace, just by giving a $10 bounty. And if that all it takes, and we go from Stadia today to 2 years from now, and say 10 times the number of people are using it, or 50 times the number of people are using Stadia, I think people are going to be pointing back to this $10 bounty and all these changes that were made in this keynote as something that really grabbed the platform and kind of raised it up to a higher echelon.
You know, that click-to-play bounty thing is very, very interesting, especially when you combine that. And I assume that you can combine it with this, because it's two things that go together like peanut butter and jelly. And that is the state share, which is a thing that is currently exclusive to Stadia. If you don't know what it is, basically, I could take a screenshot or like a 30-second clip of my game. And if the game supports this, by sharing that screenshot, you can then click on that screenshot and jump into the game where I am and continue from where I left off. Or like, there's different ways that you can implement state share. And they said something in the keynote that really surprised me. They said, when you send out a state share, they have data on this now, 1 in 10 people that see that screenshot then play that state. Like they will, and I thought that number was, that's way higher than I thought. I thought it would be 1 in 1,000 or something. Yep. The people who see that screenshot and click on, they open up that screenshot, 1 in 10 play the game at that point.
Yeah. And if ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So if I'm IOI Interactive, is it IOI Interactive that does Hitman? Yeah. If I'm IOI, I'm going to be making state share links all day long and saying, hey, try this mission where you got to wear a Santa hat and kill with somebody with a rubber duck. And then try this mission where you got to use a crossbow and be dressed like like David Bowie. You know, you got all these different things that you can do. They just get a whole team of people to hey, everybody, we're not going to do any development today. We're just going to spend all day making state share links that we'll share throughout the month. And that's going to get a bunch of people playing our game. And then if they subscribe to Stadia Pro, we get $10 for each person that does that. That's crazy talk.
It is. And you missed a perfect chance to say David Crossbowy, which I would have respected you so much, Bill, but you missed a chance there. But yeah, state share is just, it's built into the game. It's built into your controller. You hit a button and you take a screenshot, you share that with your friends. All of a sudden this could equal money for the publishers, which is ridiculous. But 1 in 10 seems insane. I wonder if that's just going back to IOI, to the Hitman and the Pixel Junk game, maybe those kind of spike the numbers a little bit, because a lot of people were sharing those states around. But I really hope this is a number that kind of stays the same and just increases. That would be a really, really good thing for Stadia for sure.
Yeah. All right. So I tried to mention this before, and because I misunderstood your transition, your segue, but this one, I think, and I'm running a poll right now that's currently going. So if you haven't voted in the poll yet, please do. I asked what was the biggest announcement this week. And currently, the one that's running away with it is the Stadia Porting Toolkit. You want to explain the Stadia Porting Toolkit to everyone real quick, Lloyd?
So I want to go back in time about, I think it was about 6 months ago or whatever, when we were talking a lot about Luna and how Luna has all these game announcements and things like that. And we're like, Google could get in front of this. They won't, but Google could get in front of this with just having a Windows emulator that runs on top of their Linux blades or Unix-based blades. And then they could easily port Windows games over and have them run in Stadia and have some sort of emulation layer between to transfer stuff between controller, yada, yada, yada. That was way more complex than what Google has essentially done. They have a porting toolkit that basically allows you to, as a publisher, as a developer rather, you don't have to necessarily take your engine apart and take out DirectX and add in Vulkan for all the low-level calls and make sure that that doesn't introduce bugs and timing issues and all this other stuff. Because Google has an emulation layer now that will then take all of the calls that are happening in DirectX and translate them into the compatible Vulkan stuff. Very similar to what Xbox did with the Xbox 360 games, because Xbox 360 ran on essentially Macintosh CPUs, and there was a bunch of them, three of them together. And when people said that Xbox 360 would be impossible to be emulated, it was because of that, because of the three chips that are working in tandem. Well, Xbox did backwards compatibility by not trying to figure that emulation out. They just translated all the calls, all the graphic calls, all the audio calls, all the IRQ, all the memory translation stuff. It is just an emulation layer. And that's essentially what Google is going to be doing. If you want, as a developer, you don't have to take DirectX out of your engine and put in Vulkan. You can just port it through Google's new Stadia porting toolkit, which is more than just that. There's a lot of other stuff that they got into about easier access to debugging. In the past, you'd actually have to have a terminal window in an SSH to some server on Google server farm, and you'd be getting all this live data through on a terminal, and you'd have to capture that. Now there's web-based archives for all these play sessions. You can see logs, you can see error reports, you can see crashing. There's just a whole bunch of behind the scenes stuff that they were showing us in here, which got me really excited, because as someone that just plays games, developed in the past, but I don't develop now. Basically, that is kind of what they're making it easier, to see all this stuff and to for developers to see what's going wrong or what's going right. This porting toolkit is pretty big news for Stadia. And it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens from here on out.
Yeah. So real quick, there's people in chat who are trying to correct us and saying that it's not emulation. And we totally understand that. But most people understand what emulation is, where That's right. you are able to play a game on a system that it was not designed for. And this is accomplishing the same task. So instead of explaining that it's a library and not emulation, we're just going with a common vernacular that most people are going to understand, when at the end of the day, the difference for the devs is huge. The difference for us really doesn't matter, the difference between a library and an emulation. The purposes of our discussion, it doesn't really matter. But thank you very much for the support, Oliver, and for everybody else who is trying to correct us. We're just trying to make sure that everybody knows what we're talking about, because if you that's say right. it's a library, most people are like, that's where I go to get books. So
I thought I said emulation back to the 360 thing, because that's initially what people were wanting to do. They wanted a 360 emulator that would run on the Xbox One. I may have misspoken. If I did, I apologize, because yeah, it's doing translation from a DirectX call, translating that to a Vulkan call, which is what I said as well. And that's the way that you would want it to be done, because that's the lowest amount of overhead to do the same amount of stuff. It'll be cool to see just how much of a hit you take between running this, say, on a Windows based server, cloud server, compared to running the essentially similar code on the Stadia cloud server, using that translation between DirectX and Vulkan.
Yeah, so the reason I'm excited about this is because it makes it so much easier for publishers for developers to bring their games to the platform. Like right now, there is a reason that we have publishers and developers that actively don't actually work on bringing their games to Stadia, because they don't have the time or the money to take some of their team and say, all right, well, you guys are going to go work on the Stadia port, because it's a smaller player base. But if it's easy to do, that's going to bring a lot more games to the platform. And I think that this is the biggest change that Google announced at the Stadia keynote. And I wonder if when they shut down, like you remember back in February when they shut down Stadia Games and Entertainment, and everybody was like, oh no, it's the end times, the sky is falling. Back then, this is probably what they have the people who are still there doing. Like the people who are still at Stadia that said they were on SG&E and they were like, all right, well, now we're not making our own games. What are they doing now? They were probably working on this stuff, making the Stadia porting kit much better, easier, in order to assist their... This is exactly what they said in February, by the way. Not quote, but this is what they said in February. They said, we're going to work on making it easier for our partners to bring their games to our platform. That's what they said, and now we're seeing that. So I think that this is fantastic news, and I think that we're going to see a lot more games on Stadia because of it. And as those games come to Stadia, the publishers are going to want you to play those games, so they're going to be tweeting about them, using State Share, getting those links out there, and they're going to be the ones advertising Stadia instead of Google advertising Stadia, which is always going to land better with the general consumer. It's always better when you hear about, hey, my awesome game is on Stadia, not, hey, I'm Stadia, play games on Stadia. Like, that's it doesn't land as well. And I think that this is a huge, huge deal.
Exactly. And one last thing, the one thing you didn't see on the keynote, on any of the slides, any of the text, any of the comments, was 4K 60. Google has moved past ensuring that every game that comes to the platform is 4K 60. They've understood that there's some games that are fine at 1080p 30 and they'll never need 60 frames a second. And they're not pushing that, or they don't seem to be pushing that as much as they were in the past. Which I think is a smart way to do it, because then that gets that conversation out. Like, is this game really 4K 60? Is it is the resolution really 4K, or is it, I don't know, 1800p that's been upscaled to 4K? Who really cares? Don't talk about it. Just have developers release games that are awesome, and people will play those awesome games.
Just to clarify, you're not wrong if you care about those things, but
for sure,
Lloyd and I generally don't care about those things. We just want to play the game, and we're perfectly fine playing the game at whatever resolution and frame rate it happens to be. Mm-hmm. Do we like it when the frame rates and resolutions are higher? Sure, but it's not like a deal breaker for us.
Taking it out of every single advertisement that they've had out is just the smart thing to do.
Which is what we told them, I don't know, 2 years ago or whenever, like a forever ago, we said, stop talking about numbers, just talk about games, and you're going to make people happier. And now that's what they're doing. So, you know, we know they listen to the show. Good job, Stadia.
We're available for consulting as well. Very, very affordably.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's right. But only if you name a character David Cross Bowie. Okay.
That's right.
Let's start talking about, well, actually, before we move on to the bad news, the delays, I want to talk really quick about, or I just want to let people know about this interview with Karine Yap. Is there anything in there that you definitely want to talk about before we move on?
I don't think so. It's a really good interview. And if you're interested in Stadia and kind of the business side of game development or platform development, I guess, really good interview that you should read. They did a really good job over at GameIndustry.biz.
Absolutely. I will say this. There's one quote that I do want to pull out, and it says here, the continued promotion of these features, the new wave of incentives to get more developers on board as pro partners, and that 80-15 revenue share lasting until 2023 suggests that the perceived inevitable failure of Stadia might not be as imminent as some people think. And this is just one example of many articles that I've seen in the past few days that is saying, yeah, you know what? It's not nearly the disaster that everybody's making it out to be. And that's even coming from some publications that have made it out to be a disaster. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that is slowly going to start changing people around. So I think that was a really good interview, and should absolutely check it out. Just type in Karine Yap interview. You'll find it. I'll try and put a link in the description down below later. Right.
And it also shows one thing, the rush to be the first that says a platform is dead so that you can be the person that called it. maybe wait a little bit. Don't just do it in the first few seconds so that people can save interesting sound clips or refer to interviews and web posts and things. Because they made one decision doesn't necessarily mean that the whole place is going to fall apart.
And you know what? I don't want to spend too much time talking about this, but I put out two videos yesterday. I published both videos at exactly the same time. One video
was an error. I thought it was a bug. I'm like, what happened? What happened?
Yeah. So one of the videos was the reasons why I'm hyped for the Steam Deck, and the other video was the reasons it was the reasons I'm worried about the Steam Deck. And as of right now, it was 12 hours ago that I posted it. It says, so I have concerns about the Steam Deck was the one that I said was, you know, not good. And then the one that I said I am excited about it is the good one. I have concerns about the Steam Deck got 2,300 views in the last 14 hours. And the reasons why I'm hyped for the Steam Deck only got 805 views.
Yep.
And look, both of those videos are not, like, neither of them are clickbait. I'm hyped for the Steam Deck, and I have concerns about it. Both of those things can be true at the same time. But it just goes to show you, way more people clicked on the negative stuff. More people click on the negative stuff. So, first off, watch both of those videos. But way more people click on the negative stuff, which is why you always see negative stuff. Stop clicking on the negative stuff. Stop it.
Right.
Except for mine, because I think we're pretty fair. All right. Yeah. Moving on to some negative stuff for sure. We got some delays, and I'm super sad about these delays. I would gladly take a delay over a crappy game any day of the week, but we've got some delays. We got Resident Evil 7 not Resident Evil 7, Resident Evil Reverse. I love the name, by the way. Reverse, which is basically this multiplayer version of Resident Evil, was previously announced for July 2021, is being moved to 2022 so the team can continue to work to deliver smooth gameplay experience. We will share updated launch details at a later time. Thank you very much for your convenience and patience and understanding. And then Riders Republic. This one is killing me. Riders Republic says, we can't wait for you to hit the Republic in an upcoming beta. This will be the first time that you get to go hands-on. To ensure we can deliver the best game for all players, we made a tough decision to delay our release date from September 2nd to October 28th. So that's not very long, but it's still long enough to make me sad. This will give us more time to fine-tune the experience and give you another chance to jump in before the launch and provide feedback. And then Rainbow Six Extraction also got a delay. We're embracing the opportunity to take additional time to bring this vision to life in a way it deserves in January 2022. So that game has also been delayed. This one, I was probably... My tune completely changed on this after playing Rainbow Six Siege. The idea of playing Rainbow Six against not players is very enticing. And I really was looking forward to this, but those are three games that are all delayed. Which one's the one that's the gut punch for you, Lloyd?
Extraction. I've enjoyed Siege way more than I expected, just like you just finished saying, Bill. But the thought of playing against enemies instead of other people that know exactly the 1 millimeter of cover that they're going to get but can still shoot me from makes me excited to play against enemies. Having to wait for that, January is fine. That's not super far away, and I'd rather the game come out better than rushed to market. But I thought, you know, Siege has been out forever. You'd think that they would have everything down pat with this one. So this one surprises me the most that it's being delayed.
Yeah, and I don't know. Pushing it to 2022 makes me super sad. But you know what? It's not the end of the world. Exactly. The Riders Republic one, like, that's the one. It's already been delayed a couple times, I think. And having it delayed yet again makes me super sad. So, you know, they say it's October. We'll see. You know, stop
giving dates.
Stop giving dates. Why do publishers think that it's a good idea? I wish that they would just never announce a game until it's 100% done. And then they'll say, by the way, next month we're going to release this game. And then spend a month hyping that game and then have it come out on the day that you say. Like, you look at Square Enix with Final Fantasy VII Remake. They showed it off at E3 like 5 years in a row or something. Stop announcing your games ahead of time. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Especially when a game's been delayed so often. Like, just don't say we're delaying it from September 2nd to later this year. And just leave it at that. And then give us a surprise 2 weeks before launch that the game is actually coming.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to this. There's going to be some more competition. Whenever you have a new industry, a lot of companies are going to try and be the first in that to really make it big. And right now, cloud gaming is a brand new industry. And you've got Microsoft trying to get into it. You've got Amazon trying to get into it. You've got Google trying to get into it. We've got Walmart and Netflix and Nvidia. And like, I'm counting all of these different places where you're going to be able to play video games from the cloud. And Netflix is getting in on this as well. Why don't you tell people about this, Lloyd?
Yeah, so it came out this week, according to Bloomberg, that a bunch of high-level appointments and poaching from other game companies and platform holders, that Netflix is building their own cloud gaming service. Interesting. I was kind of like, okay, well, this will come in a few months, 6 months, 12 months, whatever. It takes a while to ramp up and get all the content and stuff like that. But then there was another leak where someone basically disassembled one of the binaries. I can't remember if it was the Android app or the iOS app. And they found a PlayStation 5 controller icon in there. They saw something referencing Ghosts of Tsushima, which is a PlayStation exclusive. And it's like, oh my God, did they partner with Sony? Like, there's a lot of unknown here, but it's really, really intriguing. Like, if they've partnered with Sony and this is going to be Sony's new cloud gaming thing, which is a partnership with Netflix, I mean, that is a relationship that is just destined for success, you would think. So this story instantly got way more exciting than, oh, they hired Bob and Fred from all these other companies. Now it's like, oh my God, there might be a partnership with someone else. Of course, they could have just had that in there for testing. This is probably not something that is happening, but we've laughed about Walmart a few times because they said they wanted to get into cloud gaming, and it just makes me chuckle because the last place that I would expect to do a good cloud streaming service would be Walmart, based on all the video attempts that they made, which just fizzled out and failed. Netflix getting into cloud gaming could be very interesting when it comes to market.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the companies who know how to send video. Netflix is definitely one of them. Now, the difference between Netflix and game streaming is Netflix is like that does not require any kind of latency. Like, you can you hit the play button and it buffers and then you're fine. You got to be really good with that latency in order to get game streaming right, which Google is. But at the end of the day, I feel like the more competition that you have in this space, the better. It's going to make this is going to make Stadia better. This is going to make Xbox Cloud Gaming better. This is going to make Luna better. This is going to help. A rising tide raises all boats. And the more companies that get into this, the more people will understand, hey, you know what? This cloud stream, it isn't so bad. Maybe I should try it out. And then they'll be playing on Stadia, and they'll be playing on Xbox, and they'll be playing all over the place, and they'll be playing on Netflix, and I keep making jokes, but maybe even Walmart.
Maybe. The interesting thing about Netflix, Netflix never has to think about latency at all. No. They don't care that if it takes 30 seconds from when you hit play to the video coming to you, it's that long of a delay. Obviously, they'd like to get that down, but they don't need milliseconds from when you hit play to when the video is coming there, because who cares? It would take time if you put a DVD in your DVD player or a Blu-ray in your Blu-ray player, got to the menu, hit play. People understand that there's a bit of a delay. Netflix gets around a lot of the issues with bandwidth because at one point they were consuming like 80% of the bandwidth in the US or some stupid number. Like it was a large number. I don't know exactly the number. It wasn't 80%, but it was ridiculously large. And they got around that by having content servers on the major ISPs in the States. So if you're a Comcast user, you got Netflix from mini Netflix inside of Comcast. Well, you can't do that with gaming. Easily, there's no way that you could easily do that with gaming. So if Netflix really wants to be low latency across the US, they're gonna have to set up new data centers in a lot of different locations. Same with Canada, same with Europe, same in all these other things. So this is more than just making partnerships and finding a controller that will work. There's a lot of architecture that's gonna have to change for Netflix to be able to have very low latency for gameplay. So this is going to be a really fascinating story as it develops, and I want to see what happens. I'm a gamer first. I love every single game platform. I don't own all of them because I can't find a damn PS5, but I'll play a game on any platform, and having more cloud platforms, just like you said, Bill, it increases competition, which means that us, the consumer, benefits in the end. We're going to have better services, cheaper prices, and new functionality that if only one person was in the game, probably wouldn't be there.
All right. Before we move on to CrowdPlay, where we talk about the things that people had sent in via Super Chats, real quick, I want to go through some of the polls that I posted. So I asked, what do you think is the biggest announcement this week? By far, people said the Stadia porting toolkit was the biggest deal, which I agree with. I asked, what is the most disappointing delay that was announced? 46% said Riders Republic, 30% said Rainbow Six Extraction, and then the others were Show Me the Results, and Reverse only got 1%. That surprises me because Resident Evil is such a huge, huge game on Stadia. People love that thing. And then I have a poll running right now, which I'm going to go ahead and end. I said, what do you think of Netflix getting into games? 54% said, cool, I guess. And the rest were, you know, nobody really, like, it was really far out there in front with 54%. All right. Before we get to the Super Chats, I do want to say real quick, StadiaHunters.com is running a competition where you can like win money playing games. I guess they are about to launch week 2, and you could have a chance if you win first place of winning like $1,000. So if you want to know more about that, check out StadiaHunters.com. And Jack sent this to me, so I figured I would share it with all of you. All right, moving on to the Super Chats. We had a bunch come in today. Thank you very much, everybody, for using the Super Chat feature to support the show and make sure that we see your questions. So at the beginning of the show, Anthony Garcia became a member. If you want to know what the benefits are for becoming a member, click on the join button down below. One of those benefits is that our D&D streams that we do from time to time, those are available for members after the fact. Everybody can watch them when they're live, but after the fact, it's just members. So that's one of the things that Anthony Garcia is able to do. We already talked about what Matthew said. Jem said, hello, gamers. And he said, I think if the new pro system is a huge success, we should see old pro games coming back to be claimable again. And that is a very interesting proposition. The idea that we've had games that were like Tomb Raider, I can't remember which one, but Tomb Raider something or other. I think all of them actually at some point were on pro. Right. Tomb Raider was on pro for a little bit and then disappeared. Just so everybody knows, if you claim it while it's on pro, you have it as long as you're subscribed, whether it's claimable or not. This is very different than the way that Xbox Game Pass works. Right. The idea of games coming back to pro later, What game would you want to see? And I'm looking at chat as well, but Lloyd, what game would you like to see come back? That I know that you didn't miss out on any of them.
Right.
But there's a lot of people that did miss out on some. Which game would you want to come back?
I think you hit it the nail on the head right away with the Tomb Raider trilogy that's on Stadia. One of the Tomb Raider games was, I think maybe even two of them, if I remember correctly, it was so long ago, but at least one of them were pro when getting onto Stadia was impossible unless you were a founder. So you it was very tough to get a Stadia Pro subscription because you had to get an invite or be a founder. So a lot of those games were claimable only for a short period of time, and maybe people miss them. So getting those ones back would be really great. There's another game that I was on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think of it right now. So do you have one off the top of your head while I keep looking?
Justin Lindholm in chat says Metro. That Metro game, Metro Exodus, yep, is really, really cool and beautiful as well. It's a really pretty game. That is a game that I feel like a lot of people probably missed out on because it was pretty early on, and a lot of people came after it was no longer available. So I think that you know, really the early ones, but having them come back around is something that I don't know that I ever really thought about before.
Right. The one game I was thinking of was SteamWorld Quest.
Oh, that's such a good game.
But all of them could come back to Pro at some point. Yeah. And they're all games that encourage slow play and playing them over a series of days. Those would be fantastic games to come back to Pro.
You know, and you know what I would do if I were a developer, which I'm not, I would say, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to implement a state share feature in our game. We're going to bring it back to Pro for a month. So it'll be in Pro. People will be playing it because it's part of their subscription. And then they're going to be sharing out all of their state share links, which would get a whole bunch of people to sign up for the game. Hey, by the way, if you sign up for Stadia Pro, you can click on this link and play. That would be a really good advertising like campaign for a publisher to do, because they're going to make money on the game. Stadia Pro, they're going to make money on those links, and then the goodwill that they get after it's no longer in Pro after a month, they're going to have people buying the game afterwards. So they get to win over and over and over again. That's what they should be doing. Ahmed in chat says Strange Brigade was really cool. Absolutely, that's a great game. I didn't spend much time in it only because it was focused on multiplayer, and I was too busy to play a multiplayer game at that time.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there's so many great games that have hit Pro over the years and months. It's weird saying years, but it hasn't quite been 2 years, I guess. But having some of those really good games coming back, I'd be fine with it. Just like you, Bill. If I just bought a game yesterday and then it's announced that it's coming to Pro tomorrow, I don't really care. I spent my money. I made that decision whether to purchase the game or wait. And I'm happy that other people get to play it. So I'd be the same way if games that I've already claimed on Pro come back to Pro. It wouldn't be something that would make me complain, although I'm sure there's going to be a segment of people online
oh, absolutely,
that would complain.
Yeah, before we get to this next super chat that came in, I just want to say I really like it when people click the like button. That's all. All right. Consino sent in a $5 super chat. Thank you very much for the support. They said a $10 click to play pro bounty makes advertising your game in a YouTube ad for Stadia even an easier no-brainer. And I'm going to, before we really respond to that, I'm just going to say YouTube, not Stadia, but YouTube, make the click to play a button, not a link. Put it right below the video as a button. It just says play. Do it right now. You won't regret it. What's your thoughts on Consino's super chat?
Yeah. I mean, if you're paying, like, I don't know what current ad revenue or ad rates are for running an ad on YouTube. Let's say it's a $10 per million impressions or per 1,000 impressions. $10 per mil is how they use it in the industry. you got to assume that, okay, of the 1,000 people that are going to click it, at least one's going to sign up for Pro. So this ad is a net zero cost to me. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it could be something that would make me money. So yeah, I didn't even think of advertising on YouTube, but that makes total sense. But like you said, Bill, right below the video, like even at the bottom where it shows like the game card, just have a little button beside it that says play now on Stadia. If it's a game that is inside of Stadia, Google, you're one company. I know you're many separate companies all under one umbrella, but you're essentially one company. So hopefully you guys can make that happen. You probably know a guy or girl or two can help you with that.
Yeah, I think that would be a huge change. And if you did it to like on every one of your videos that you post, like, hey, I make game X, you go to youtube.com/game X, you know, there's my game right there. And I've got a bunch of videos of like tutorials and like the release trailer and stuff like that. And if there's a button right underneath it that says play now, it's going to make me a lot of money. Me being the people who are making the games, not me, Bill. Olafar Irison wanted us to stop saying emulation earlier. We already talked about that, but thank you very much, Olafar. Jay Dengel sent in a $10 super chat. Thank you very much for supporting the channel, Olafar and Jay Dengel. And he just said, great show today, guys. Well, thank you very much, Jay Dengel. Great job watching the show, I have to say. Of all of the people, I think you did a great job. And then finally, Victor Del Maestro sent us a picture of a hot dog for some reason. I'm not going to complain. Lloyd, I'm hungry now. Oh, Lloyd looks hungry.
Yeah, which made me laugh. Philip Weiss in the chat room had a good point. They need to make the store public. Yes, please. Someone shouldn't need to be a Stadia member to see the store. Have it open to everybody. And also, if I own a game, please show me what the sale price is so I can talk about it on the show. They would just make me happy. I don't know if anybody else would have any utility with that, but I want to know what the sale price is, even though I already have claimed the game for Pro, purchased the game, or am part of Ubisoft Plus. I still want to see what that price is when it's on sale.
Lloyd, you can see the price. The price is purchased.
Exactly.
That's and right. I have the same problem on Nintendo, like, because Lloyd and I both have Nintendo shows where we talk about Nintendo stuff, and if there's a big sale or whatever, I have to go to Deku Deals in order to find out how much games are on sale for, because on mine, it just say, you already own this. Why do you care what the price is? Well, I'm a podcaster, you weirdo. That's right. Why.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you very much, everybody, for hanging out with us and all the super chats that came in and all of the people who are filling up the chat room. You guys are awesome. If you want to be here for a fun time, and you're listening to this on your favorite podcast player, head on over to nerdnest.tv, click on the subscribe button, click on the bell, and then next time it pops up that hey, Lloyd and Bill are talking about video games, click on that little button and watch along with us and participate in the polls and be part of the chat. It's a lot of fun. So thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. You are fantastic.
That's right. Exactly. Thanks, everybody, for coming out and joining us for yet another StadiaCast. This was a good one. A lot of really interesting stuff is coming to Stadia in the future. So hope all of you fine people are excited about it.